When one of us takes to this podium to deliver a guest sermon, I think it's expected that we'll ponder the deepest, most profound questions, the relationships we have with ourselves, one another, the planet, the cosmos, and whatever lies beyond. Well, I tried that, and I only made it about 5 minutes into my contemplation before my mind went the direction it always goes, and I started asking questions like, what would the Lone Ranger be without Tonto? What would Batman be without Robin? What would Lucy Ricardo be without Ethel Mertz? Okay, well, hear me out, because I think I might be onto something with this. The concept of the trusty sidekick is one that appears again and again in film, literature, and popular culture. Perhaps its appeal stems from the inherent loneliness of life. We love to imagine what it must be like to have someone call us kimosabi, a faithful friend to act as our counterpart, provide alternative points of view, see things we don't see, a companion who will check ourselves before we wreck ourselves, and even appear out of nowhere, when all seems lost, to knock the bad guy over the head with a frying pan. The problem with this fantasy is that it misses an obvious truth. All of us already have a sidekick. They're with us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, from the moment we take our first breath until the moment we take our last. One would think we'd shower these lifelong companions with the utmost gratitude for being there for us. One would think we'd do everything we could to care for them in acknowledgement of their constancy and allegiance. Instead, this is how many of us, at various times in our lives, talk to our sidekicks. Just look at you. You left the house looking like that. Your hair is a mess. None of your clothes look good, and you need to lose at least 10 pounds. You used to be thinner. What happened? You don't deserve to eat that muffin. Put that down. When did you get to be so old? You're nothing but a decrepit bag of bones. Can't get around like you used to, can you? Always sick with something, always a new ache, a new pain. Face it, you're no spring chicken. Face it, you're no beauty queen. You're no ladies' man, you're no athlete. Why do you even bother? If a character in a book or a movie were to speak to his counterpart that way, he'd be called the villain. And yet there are scores among us here today who talk with similar scorn and derision to our own constant companions. The sidekick I'm speaking of course, is your own body. And now seems like a good time to check in with that body. You might feel tense. You might feel a pit in your stomach in recognition of some of the ugly words I just used. Some of you might have even been talking to your sidekicks in such a way as you readied yourself for Sunday service this morning. Or maybe you don't actively abuse your body as much as you neglect it. Take me, for example. This month has been even busier for me than usual, and about a week ago, I found myself working through all the breaks I normally take while writing, just to get a few more words on the page. For a while, my body put up with it silently. It's gotten rather used to being ignored, but after several hours had passed, without a pause for a snack or a stretch, or to step away from my desk, my sidekick began to nudge me a bit, to talk to me in its own particular language of stomach growls and tight muscles and an ever-increasing sense of malaise. Hey, kimosabi, doesn't a walk outside sound nice? It was saying to me. You've been at it for hours. Just another half an hour, I think, annoyed at being interrupted. But we haven't eaten anything in ages, and it's been hours since you've gotten up. Shh. Just another half an hour. I'm busy. So busy. Of course, by the time I finally did take that walk to get a bite to eat, my body had rebelled. I'd become downright nauseated from hunger and had a terrible headache from having had my nose to the grindstone for so long. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, a writer like me, albeit a far better one, obviously knew the feeling. He wrote, "If the mind that rules the body ever so far forgets itself as to trample on its slave, the slave is never generous enough to forgive the injury, but will rise and smite the oppressor." If our lives are like movies, and they often feel that way, don't they? In that scene, I was the oppressor, the villain. I was treating my body like a minion, a lackey, a slave, and it rose up to smite me. We neglect and abuse our bodies in other ways, too, through poor diet, through excessive drinking, through nicotine use, through risky sex, through drug abuse. This often leads to an ever-destructive loop of negative self-talk, where we suffer the bodily consequences of this abuse and then berate ourselves for abusing ourselves, only to allow that negative self-talk to manifest in further bodily abuse. For some, this will lead to chronic or even terminal disease. Some patients I see, said the physician Zachary Berkowitz, are actually draining into their bodies the diseased thoughts of their minds. And what happens when our bodies become poisoned by the thoughts in our minds? We get sick, we go to a doctor, and the doctor writes a prescription. Another word for a prescription? A script. It's a new script for our sidekick to follow, and yet meanwhile the mind goes on following the same old script, the same old cruel attacks. As a yoga teacher, I can see my students' relationships with their bodies in the way they carry themselves, in the way they move. A woman going through a divorce turns slightly away from me as I hug her, as if her sidekick isn't sure anymore how to receive kindness when it is offered. The workaholic comes barreling into class head first, stuck in his thoughts, dragging his sidekick behind him as if it was a mere afterthought. An older, handsome man wears socks to every single class, ashamed of the way his feet look, as if his feet, the feet he was born with, not the feet he chose, are a reflection of who he is, as if his feet are who he is. But I know this, my body is not who I am. Your body is not who you are. I know this because the character that I see in the mirror looking back at me has changed dramatically over time. She has softened, she has weakened, she's aged, whereas the self inside me has not. I know our bodies are not who we are because I can meet a drop-dead gorgeous woman at a party and feel pure burning envy that I don't have what she has, only to recognize later that what I saw was just her sidekick. I realize I've been comparing my inside to her outside. And I know that my body is not who I am because when I meditate, when I pray, when I am in flow with the universe and all that is, my body does not exist. It disappears. It's written out of the scene. But what's more, the mind inside me, that mind that is often the villain, it disappears too. And yet something else remains. Something greater than the mind or the body. This explains why I've always had a bit of difficulty with the term mindfulness. I understand and very much appreciate the concept. I value that concept, being deeply observant of what is without judgment from the mind. But to me, that feels not like mindfulness, but mindlessness. But whether we call it mindfulness or mindlessness, this practice calls on us to inhabit the present moment. Our bodies are experts at inhabiting the present moment because indeed the present moment is the only dimension of time our bodies can inhabit. Maybe this is where some of our resentment with our bodies lies. The mind can remember what our sidekicks were like in the past, or can envision what our sidekick could be like in the future. And yet we are stuck with the sidekick we have right now, and right now, and always right now. The will's the only weapon, wrote Simone Weil. Sorry. The will's only weapon, wrote Simone Weil, is that it is able, insofar as it consists of thought, to embrace the different moments of time, whereas the body is limited to the present. Of course, were Friedrich Nietzsche to be an earshot of that, he might have countered with his famous line, "There is more wisdom in your body than in your deepest philosophy." We have so much to learn from our body wisdom. Just as all the most beloved heroes in our literary and cinematic history learned much from their wise sidekicks. Our bodies, for one, are masters at dealing with uncertainty. Like Robin, the boy wonder, always ready for what Batman had up his sleeve, our hearts never know when they will have to kick into high gear. Our lungs never know what the quality of the air will be from one moment to the next. And yet our body is always prepared, always adapting, always supporting our well-being so long as we care for it in turn. Caring for our bodies means freeing them from the false images that media and society tell us are the ideal. Those external standards of youthful beauty and attractiveness are not what are needed to have a fulfilling and successful life. Anyone who has experienced truly mindful mindlessness knows we already have all we need for a fulfilling and successful life inside all of us. I'm reminded of my very favorite film, a movie I've loved dearly since I was a child, The Wizard of Oz. It's the ultimate sidekick flick. Not only does the main character feel she's lacking what will make her whole, a home where she belongs, all three of her counterparts also feel their bodies are missing something crucial, something other people have that they ain't got, said the Cowardly Lion so famously. For the lion, of course, it's guts. For the Tin Man, a heart. And the Scarecrow believes he'd unravel every riddle of every individual in trouble or in pain if he only had what so many of us also wish we had, a better equipped brain. And yet, what happens at the end of the movie? The wizard explains to each of them that what they were looking for was inside them all along. The lion had throughout their journey steeled himself in the face of great danger. The Tin Man had rusted repeatedly from all his heartfelt crying, and the Scarecrow had been the brains behind the operation from the start. Dorothy's sidekicks, in other words, were whole, just the way they were. They were able in their wholeness to be dear and trusted friends to Dorothy, and Dorothy loved them for it. We too can learn to see the wholeness that we are, to treat our bodies as dear and trusted friends. We can make choices for our bodies that will nourish them, care for them, demonstrate our gratitude for their faithful devotion. We might find that our sidekicks will breathe a sigh of relief. They might have been waiting around a very long time for this friendly attitude on our part. They might find it a refreshing change of pace to be fed a nice meal from a nice dinner plate instead of from a bag of chips at the kitchen counter. They might like the way we now stop that villainous mind in its tracks before it can utter a word. Who knows? Your sidekick might so enjoy this newfound chance to share the spotlight that he or she will feel like dancing a little. Isn't it true, after all, that in I Love Lucy, Ethel Mertz was always the better dancer anyway? Let your body dance like no one is judging, no one is watching, most especially not your mind. Let your body, give that mind of yours a chance to redeem itself as the hero instead of the villain. Give it a chance for a happy ending. It's high time for that, Kemosabe. Thank you.